You are now listening to Well-Fed Women, the show that's been radically changing the way women perceive health, fitness, and their bodies since 2015. I'm your host, Noelle Tarr. Submit your questions to wellfedwomen@gmail.com, and you can keep up with the show on Instagram at wellfedwomen. Welcome to the Well-Fed Women podcast. This is episode number 287. We're getting close to 300. I'm your host, Noelle Tarr of coconutsandkettlebells.com. I'm a nutritional therapy practitioner and certified personal trainer. I'm here with my co-host, Stephanie Ruper, and today we are going to be discussing changing health philosophies, both our own over time and rotating health philosophies of diet culture. We're also going to be talking about post-pill amenorrhea and how to incorporate good nutrition and workouts when you are overworked and overtired, which I am guessing is just about all of you. Before we jump in, it is prep dish season. I know so many of you are losing your minds. You're overwhelmed. You're overworked, as I just mentioned, which means you're likely having a hard time cooking meals and just getting meal planning done. Outsource your meal planning to the resident expert on the topic, RD and Chef Allison Schaff. Allison thoughtfully crafts each weekly meal plan using her own well-tested recipes, and she does your grocery list for you and writes out all of the instructions for prep work so that dinner is quick and easy for you for the following nights. When you sign up for Prep Dish, you receive an email every week with meal plans. So you'll receive the paleo one and then the gluten-free one and the low-carb one. And then she's even added a super fast option, which is her meal plan made super simple and quick. And then with whatever meal plan you chose to download from the email, you get a complete grocery list and instructions for prepping your meals for the entire week. She sends it to you with plenty of time to spare, so it's easy to prep, and the recipes are super easy to follow and incredibly delicious. You just kind of review them, look at the grocery list, and go shopping. Or, in this day and age, shop in your app, do your grocery shopping on your phone. And then there's so much variety, which I love because it's easy to get stuck in a rut when you're busy and overwhelmed. So right now you can try Prep Dish for 2 weeks for totally free. There's no better time to do it, to test it out. Just go to prepdish.com/wellfed. You can sign up right there. And just make sure the code WELLFED is applied at checkout, and that cost will be zeroed out. Again, that's PrepDish, PrepDish.com/WELLFED. Hi, Stephanie.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm okay. Stuff is happening. I have some things going on. Oh, I have some things going on in my personal life that may be fun to talk about.
Are we allowed to hear?
Okay. So I think I mentioned last week, and I don't know how much I've ever mentioned this on this podcast or whatever. It's only become something that I've paid attention to in the last year or so, but it has come to my attention in a large part because I've had to take a lot of selfies for Instagram, that my nose is pretty crooked, and I've seen a couple doctors, and it's actually like broken in a bunch of places, and we don't know why. It may have happened before I was even born. So as it turns out, I don't take in as much air as other people, which is just very interesting to think about. And I'm sure you can understand that I have fallen down so many different research holes. And I've done a lot of thinking about it and working with it of late. Mm-hmm. And maybe finding some resolution soon, but I don't want to say anything preemptively. But next time you talk to me, we may be having like a totally different conversation.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Was that too mysterious? Or is that okay for now?
That's okay for now. I'm like, want to ask you a lot more, but I trust that you'll say when you're ready. That's super interesting. So when you say less air, like, is there a way to test that where you are actually physically getting less oxygen in, or?
Okay, yeah, so I'll just tell you guys. So, yeah, I've seen a couple of doctors, and I actually saw a plastic surgeon several months ago before COVID started. I'm seeing him again on Thursday to talk about, like, fixing my nose. So I may be getting a nose job. I may be but my nose, it's, like, broken in a bunch of, you know, whatever. We don't need to delve into the intricacies of, you know, the ethics, because I've done a lot of this in my life. We can talk about it. But can it be tested? Well, I can do a very simple test, which is when I press on where my nose is crooked and I inhale, it feels a lot different than when I don't. So that's very interesting. And I actually, like, one of the sides of my nose, where it leads back to into like your lungs and stuff, mm-hmm. is a very, like, it's quite a narrow opening. And anytime the air gets dry, remember I mentioned dry air and humidifiers last time we chatted? when air gets dry, your sinuses can get inflamed. And so, like, that little opening, like, swells up, like, kind of swells shut a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So anyway, I've been looking into this a lot recently because I think it has a lot to do with my headaches. It may have a lot to do with my headaches. And I would really like to be able to, like, breathe the way that it feels when I press on my nose all the time. So I see
what you're saying. I'm looking at your
options.
I'm looking at your nose. So if you...
It's so crooked. Like, when
I brought,
like,
up your selfie.
When I've seen doctors, and all of the, you'll notice if you go to, like, Stephanie Ruper Instagram, mm-hmm. wow, I'm being so vulnerable right now, everybody. When you look at the Stephanie Ruper Instagram, you'll notice that every single one of my photos is of the left side of my face.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah, because my nose is, like, when I've seen doctors about this, they're like, wow, your nose is actually, like, pretty messed up, which is weird because I didn't notice my entire life until Instagram, right? And until I, like, had to start taking selfies and look at photos of my face. That wasn't something that I ever, you know, I was never an aesthetically inclined person. I don't see things. I, like, have ideas in this nebulous cloud, and I leave my keys on trains, and I don't look at my nose, you know, like, I just don't pay attention to details. But it has become a medical concern, and I'm looking into surgical options. So we'll see. But that's a big thing going on for me right now. Kind of exciting.
Do you want to unpack the ethics of that? Because I'm going to be honest, like, I have a lot of excess skin from my babies. And so part of me sometimes entertains the idea of, like, what if I just had this removed? Because it's really freaking annoying. And the other part of me is like, yeah, it's fine. I can just accept it and move on. So I'd love to hear some of, like, you know, the thought process that you have going through that.
Yeah, there's a lot. I did the other day have this almost paralyzing, this thought of, I don't like to use that word so lightheartedly, like this thought of thinking, am I doing something ethically wrong? And I called my mom and she was like, sweetheart, no. So initially when I realized, so I've read studies about the symmetry of faces mm-hmm. years ago, just because I read about evolution and stuff, right? And so I know that in studies, when scientists, psychologists want to make a face less appealing to people, they make the nose crooked, right? Like, they make it look like me. And so when I realized that my nose was not straight, I became like really self-conscious, incredibly self-conscious. And that was, but I also knew I had this whole lifetime of being really confident and talk and telling people about being confident and all of this evidence that, like, people, it didn't matter to people. They might, you know, obviously it changes the way you look, but it's far down on the list when you compare it to, you know, the way you talk and the way you engage and the way you look and the way you smile, not look, but, like, look at them and smile and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So, mm-hmm. like, there was self-consciousness, and a part of me was like, wow, I really want to change that. At the same time, I thought, I've written books about confidence and being, you know, this. And since delving into the world of plastic surgery, I've seen people do so much, and Googling it and reading about people's experiences. And there's so many people who, you know, they write their blogs, they do their YouTube videos about their journey with their rhinoplasty, their septoplasty, these kinds of nose jobs. And they all talk about just how happy they are yeah, they're so self-conscious and they're very happy when they fix it. And they do look different. But how heartbreaking is it that, you know, we live in a world where they felt awful before. And so I did. I felt very awful about that. But I couldn't feel comfortable thinking seriously about these surgical options. And it's been more than a year now before I had done so much research and realized how important it was for my health. Do I think it's wrong to do it just aesthetically? No, I would never say that because fine, you know. I'm not going to judge somebody's experience and that sort of thing. But I also feel like I personally need to be directing my wealth towards other things. And my, like, people talk about, like, oh, it's so easy these days, and fat transfer to face is the new thing, and it's a bizarre world. I would probably not do it. I'm saying I would probably not do it if it didn't have such potential promise for my headaches. But when I was talking to my friend the other day, like, I can't even stay with people if their rooms are warm or dry because I get headaches. I now know. I didn't used to know, but now I know why. And I was staying with a friend and I had horrible headaches. And I was talking about, you know, if this has even a 30% chance of reducing my headaches by 30%. I just started crying, you know. I was like, wow, yeah. I really want that, you know, and it feels worth it to me. And I'm young and healthy, and, you know, there's a lot of other health risks, and increased infections is a really big thing for this kind of nasal construction and lots of stuff. And so I'd rather do it now, you know, as opposed to, say, in 50 years or whatever, when it maybe has a worse impact on my life. Hmm. So anyway, I don't know if that's... I'm sorry. This
No, I think that's great. No, it's a wonderful discussion. I think that it's important. Look, we have people in our community who have had boob jobs, nose jobs, plastic surgery, Botox, all that stuff. Yeah. I don't judge anybody. Of course, we are a podcast that is about...
I love our podcast.
Yeah, about
our podcast.
No shame and not being judgmental. And of course, you know, we talk about body image and body acceptance and not feeling like you have to be held to some social standard and not being driven by that, right? But I also think that we are very, like, we want to facilitate a community and a culture that is non-judgmental. You've no idea. You've never been in somebody else's shoes. So I'm never going to judge anybody for a choice that they have made, you know, if they want to have a nose job, or if that is promising to you and you think that you're going to get, like, relief headaches, like, heck yeah. You know, if I thought something was going to help my back pain that was semi-simple, I would be like, let's do it. You know, like, it just, I don't judge anybody for their choices. And I think that motivation is a big thing. And as long as your motivation is you're doing it for yourself and you're not doing it for anybody else, and this is a choice that you are making for you and you're confident, then go for it, you know?
Yeah.
And some people may not agree, and that's totally fine. But guess what? We can all come together, even if we have disagreements on certain topics, which leads me to my next discussion topic, which is from Leonie. She just kind of posed this question. I thought it would be nice to kind of just chat about our thoughts real quickly before we jump into questions. She said, can you talk about coping with the environment of COVID-19? Everyone is stressed and judgmental. I had a couple days away and my normally loving brother judged me for it. He's in lockdown zone, but I am not. People don't smile and say hello when you walk past. They just try to not get close.
You know, I try to be as forgiving as possible. And I live in the UK, and so we don't have the same, like, raging antagonism that's going on in the States right now. And that's, I see the antagonism between people who are close to me. And it can be really, like, really toxic. But the only way to ever deal with that sort of thing is to remind yourself of their context, to be kind, to remove yourself when that strategy isn't going to work. And that's really it. And when you see people on the street moving away from you, you have no idea, like, what they could have cancer, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, so the people who are being you know, really, really assiduous, usually probably have a reason. And maybe it's just that they really don't want to get COVID, but you respect it. You know, it's okay. It's not an affront to you. They're taking care of themselves. So everybody just works with the information available to them. So mm-hmm. I don't know.
I think one of the interesting things about this time is we don't have a lot of information. And so everybody has an opinion. We all are trying to figure out, we're believe everything and also believe nothing. We're all trying to figure out what is the best strategy, which, by the way, we don't really know. What's the best strategy moving forward, moving into the fall? What choices are we going to make? Are we going back to school? Are we not going back to school? Should you be going out? Should you not? It's okay to go to Costco, but it's not okay to go to church. And it's just like all of these things are, you know, people form these really strong opinions, and that's politics, really. But, you know, people have really strong opinions and then attack other people who don't have the same opinion as them. And I think, you know, of course, Steph and I have opinions about most of the things going on, but we're not, I think what's important is not to lead with shame or judgment. It will benefit you in most scenarios. Even if you're like thinking, like, I've never seen anybody's mind changed because they were shamed and judged and attacked on Facebook. Yeah. So I just think, you know, you never can. People are coming from all different walks of life. People have, and this is just a daily reminder, you know, the people you come in contact with, you don't know their story. You don't know what they what happened to them that morning. You don't know what kind of news they got. You don't know where they've been and what they've experienced. And so everybody's bringing their very messy lives into their daily walk. And I think it's really important that we lead with love and not shaming, not trying to publicly shame people for their decisions, not trying to bring people down, but just love one another and build each other up. And I know this is like, wouldn't this be great? And I know everybody's like, Noelle, you're losing your mind. This is never going to happen. But it would just be awesome if we could all come to each other with sort of a sense of like, I don't know best, but I'm just, you know, I'm bringing my opinion to the table, and we can have differences of opinion and all coexist. I just would love if we could all lead with that. And if you see something that is, you know, shaming or aggressively, you know, somebody's being attacked or something or whatever, and you feel a wrong has been done, I get it. It's hard. Like, I have a hard time now going, I just try to remove myself from any news feeds or media or anything like an hour before bed. If I come across something and it's distressing, or it just feels like humanity is falling apart and it's just arguing nonstop, then it's unsettling to me. And I just was finding that I was unsettled going to bed every night. So for the majority of it, I have removed myself from a Facebook news feed, which I do feel like Facebook is, like, I love our Facebook group, and I think it's this wonderful positive light on Facebook, but it, for the most part, I think that you will notice that there are a lot of places where there is more judgment and more attacking and more shaming, and so remove yourself from those places.
Yeah.
Yeah. Generalizations and assumptions, just not productive. Okay.
It's really hard. And sorry, okay, I'm going to let it go. But it's just, the humans are wired for it. And that's one of our biggest tasks is just to, you know, just complexify and let yourself be unsure. That's okay. It's good. Okay, done.
You have anything else?
I'm done.
Okay.
Okay.
I feel like there might be more.
No, I'm good.
Steph.
We have months and months left in which we can do this.
We need to save some of this. Okay. We just talked about two really big topics. So, let's move on to questions. Question number one is from Emma. Oh, gosh, this is another huge topic. I'd love to hear more about your health philosophies and how they shift change over time. So often I get stuck in the search for the one right answer and have been struggling with the concept of the right answer for right now. Paleo worked 2 years ago, so why is my body craving vegetarian diet right now? Kickboxing was perfect for me and my mental and physical health, but now just walking feels like all I can handle, etc., etc. This is like the story of our lives.
The story of our lives. I think it's so important to try to live like in a macro and in a micro level, like be in your life and also zoom out and look at the unfolding story, right? Because you want to be able to be objective and not just blunder your way into what's feeling right at the moment or what's trending on Twitter or Instagram or whatever, right? You don't want to do that. You want to be critical. You want to take a step back and always think, okay, where's my information coming from? How am I evaluating it? Who am I listening to? Who else could I be listening to? Maybe I shouldn't be listening to anybody right now, right? You need to be able to step back and ask questions and look at the arc of your story in terms of where you want it to be going, right? What are your goals? Positive contributions to your community in some way, some sort of professional goal, something in your family, whatever values that you want to pursue, right? Goodness, beauty, truth, justice, like, oh, you know, this, the good stuff, the stuff that we like. Think about this, the bigger story and where you want to go. And then also like let yourself be in it and listen, because that's really important. Your body is very, very important. And this is why we do things like podcast and do research and try to figure out how the body works and how society works. And that involves, you know, you've got to listen to your body and then you make a choice based on what you feel and what the world is like and where you want to go amidst these options. So that being said, like, yeah, my diet has changed so much over time. But I will say that my overall approach to eating has not. I mean, I've revised it and developed it over time, but I think generally speaking, I have said, okay, well, I think, and I'm very happy to change this based on what sort of evidence rolls along. Like, here are some foods that appear to maybe cause health problems, and it might be good to take them out if you have certain health conditions. And there are some things that are more nutritious than others, and, you know, certain diets that work better at different times, all this sort of stuff, and can understand how in different contexts they would work. And so with that, you know, it makes sense to me why some people would like keto. It makes sense to me why some people would like the bean protocol. Like, it makes sense to me why certain things work for people at certain points in time. But it is probably never going to be my thing, right, to say this is the one diet that's going to work for me and for everybody else for all time. Like, no, hard pass. Mm-hmm. You know,
hard pass.
it's so appealing. Simplicity, you know, and the more complex and unsafe and tumultuous our worlds are, the more appealing simplicity becomes. But that is maybe the most important time to resist it in certain ways, you know.
Ooh.
Like this applies to the, you know, political conversations we were just talking about, and it applies to your food as well. You know, just because simplicity is appealing doesn't necessarily mean that you should throw away all of your, you know, food and just buy like a freezer and a cow, right? You can do that, but do it alongside other things and just make sure that you're doing it for justified reasons. So that's sort of, you know, that's how I look at this sort of health thing. And most of my resources have been along this kind of vein. And I think, you know, Noelle's, we're obviously pretty aligned in a lot of things. So yeah, I don't know, like the right answer for right now, you just do the best with the information you're given, and your body is one piece of that information, but it's also not the only piece. And please, like, read as diversely and as critically as possible. And also, like, I know that this is just a little bit meta, but read how to read, you know, learn about, but you know what I mean? Because
yeah,
you could read all day long, but if you're not, you know, if you're not bringing the right, like, critical tools, if you don't know what kind of biases you're carrying with you, you know, then they're going to keep blinding you. And so, and I'm saying this, we're speaking about food. People develop the same kind of biases against carbohydrates as they do against Democrats or Republicans, you know, like,
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
That's why everybody talks about diet. Like, I mean, it is. It's like politics when you talk about carbohydrates.
Politics and religion and diet. I've been saying for years that I think diet has fallen into those circles. But I firmly believe that those are like those are the things you should be talking about, fam, you know, not avoiding. So anyway, you know, just that's how I try to navigate those things.
Yeah, I think there's some underlying truths that are always going to be, like, things that I believe. For example, quality over quantity. I always would rather people, and I'm not saying you should eat more quality and eat less. I'm saying you should not worry necessarily as much about quantity and really focus more on quality. I think a lot of the literature that we have on nutrition does not account for quality, and that's why there are a lot of problems. There are a lot of problems with certain diet protocols and all that kind of stuff. And so I think I have these underlying truths. One, of course, being just that, the quality. One of them being we need to be eating nutrient-dense foods and make sure that our food has a lot of nutrients so that we can support our body. We need to be eating enough. And there are macronutrients, and you can shift them. Those are kind of the things that I think about, that I really kind of have as these underlying foundational circumstances to how I approach eating. I think it's normal. Bodies definitely fluctuate. So it's normal for food, macronutrients, types of food, foods that you gravitate towards, all of that. It's very normal for all of that to change. So I think it's common in our society to think that change is not normal, to think that fluctuations are not normal. Fluctuations mean you're out of control. Why is this changing? That's so crazy. I don't get it. It's actually very normal because life changes, your body changes, your physiology changes, your stress changes. And I've noticed too, you know, when I'm not working out a ton, I don't really crave as much protein. And when I'm, you know, when it's colder, I crave different foods. When it's warmer, we crave different foods. And so we can see that change also seasonally. We can see we crave different foods cyclically with our cycles every month. It is very normal for things to change. Go with that flow. Just have your certain underlying things, foundational things that you know are true about food and health, and then shift things around based on that. I think it's very normal to have times when you're not really craving a ton of meat, and it's normal when there are times when you are. I think if we, you know, look back in our history at our culture too, we can see that, you know, people had to really vary their diet based on what was in season. In the winter, they ate a lot more meat. In the summer, they didn't. Maybe, you know, they probably ate a lot more whatever was around. So, of course, it depends. But in warmer climates, it was a lot of fruits and stuff like that. So embrace it. Don't necessarily think of it as crazy. And I also love what Stephanie said just about kind of keeping that foundation true, like having these underlying things that you believe that are true when you start to see things creep up in the media and on Twitter and the newest diet and the newest protocol. And you'll be able to look at all of that with a different eye. You'll be able to say, interesting, short term, lots of eliminations, lots of restrictions, short-term results. Yeah, I can see why people are all about that right now. and move on. And can maybe try it out. Maybe, you know, say, might be nice to do a little bit of intermittent fasting here or there at different points in my life, but not necessarily see it as something you have to do or something that you like, well, should I be doing this? Like, we get that question a lot too. Should I be following X protocol? And I think that when you have a basic understanding or a broader picture, you can see things as, great, this could maybe provide help at certain points of my life, and let me insert it accordingly. And that's that.
That's that.
That's that. How much of your day is spent in front of a computer screen or looking at your phone or watching TV? All of those screens emit blue light, and studies show our constant exposure to blue light through electronic devices has a negative impact on our circadian rhythms, sleep, anxiety, headaches, and even eye strain. Blue Blocks was created to fix these problems and block out the blue light with evidence-backed high-quality lenses. I've become so passionate about light optimization recently and filtering out computer light and blue light entirely after the sun sets. I wasn't doing anything about this until about a year ago, and I was experiencing eye strain and weird migraines and also unexplained wired and tiredness, especially at night. And now I wear the Blue Blocks computer filter glasses anytime I'm looking at screens and Blue Blocks sleep lenses at night, and I haven't experienced symptoms since. Blue Blocks was created because they saw the need for a product that was exactly in line with peer-reviewed academic literature, which I so appreciate. There are a lot of cheaply made lenses out there that don't actually block all of the blue and green light. Don't waste your money on that. Go to blueblocks.com/wellfed and use the code WELLFED, W-E-L-L-F-E-D, for 15% off. Their frames are gorgeous. It's a health investment that everybody needs to be considering, especially given the recent shifts to people working more from home in front of the computer all day. They can also turn almost any pair of glasses into custom blue blockers. They simply take your existing glasses and fit them with their lenses. Again, that's Blue Blocks. That's blueblocks.com/wellfed and use the code WELLFED for 15% off and free shipping worldwide. Question number two is from Shaylee. Hello, I have a question about post-pill amenorrhea versus hypothalamic amenorrhea. I was put on the pill 2.5 years ago after not having a period for a year. I often wouldn't get a bleed while on the pill during the placebo week. I don't know if that matters. I started seeing a dietitian back in April because I wanted to improve my relationship with food, undereating, overexercising, causing me to think about food all the time. At the end of May, I came off the pill to get my period back since HA was the reason I originally started. I've gained weight after working with a dietitian, but I haven't had my period after 2 months of being off the pill. Is this certainly due to hypothalamic amenorrhea, or could it just be post-pill amenorrhea? I'm nervous about taking the steps of eating more, exercising less if it's just post-pill syndrome. I've gained quite a bit of weight in some of the work I've done with the RD, so I'm nervous about gaining a lot more to recover my period if I only need to wait for the post-pill syndrome to pass. Thank you.
I've actually had a lot of conversations very much like this with people, with women who are, you know, trying to pick apart the various causes of their amenorrhea and is sort of playing this game, so to speak, which I did for many years, of how much can I have my cake and eat it too, right? Or how much can I make sure that I get to hold on to this thing, right? And how much do I get to hold on to this thing and heal? Yeah. So, unfortunately, even if you got blood work done at this point, I can't think of a blood test that would particularly be able to conclusively suggest one way or the other, especially if you don't have baseline comparisons for that sort of thing. I suppose hypothalamic amenorrhea would be indicated by having, you know, lower hormone levels, whereas having just gotten off the pill, you might have higher hormone levels, but that would be very hard to detect because hormones fluctuate over time. And again, you would want to be able to compare it to a different level. And if you don't have that, then you wouldn't be able to. So it's possible if you really, really feel like you need that information, you could try and find it. But I think patience is really warranted. I think pills can really do a lot. They really can. I have consistently seen in my own personal work with this community and in the literature that it can take women up to a year to get their periods back after having been on the pill for a wide variety of reasons, right? The pill can deplete your nutrient status. The pill can cause some changes in your gut flora. It can, of course, change the way that your body produces hormones. It can do a lot of stuff. It can leave hormones stored in your liver that then continue to be released long after you come off the pill. All of these sorts of things. So that can definitely be playing a role. I would ask you, I suppose, you know, you said that you've already taken some steps to be eating more. You know, you say that you've gained some weight. You are exercising some degree less. I don't know how much, right? And so I suppose I would ask you to really interrogate those. You know, if you have been doing that consistently, then be patient, right? Take some time. Let your body recover from the pill. Give it, you know, another few months. And if you take a good hard look at what you're doing and realize that you're still, you still have a mindset that's restrictive, where you're trying to be a little bit hungry, you know, throughout the day, where you're trying to go to bed a little bit hungry, where you're stopping yourself from being full. Like, these are slight indicators that you're still being restrictive, and your body's probably picking up on this. And the stress about it isn't necessarily helping, although stressing about it wouldn't help either. So being patient throughout all of this is really important. You can try to support your body through coming off of the pill by eating an anti-inflammatory diet that helps your body detox. And so, can somebody else say this for me, please? I'm kidding. Noelle and I laugh because we have to say this, like, we just have to say it so often. When I wrote Sexy by Nature, I had like three sentences that said this shtick. And I just copied and pasted it, and I would like go find it on my browser and just paste it again. And then I would put it on my blog. It's on like pretty much every blog post. Anyway, an anti-inflammatory diet. We talk about it in our book, Coconuts and Kettlebells. And it involves a lot of nutrient-dense foods like eggs and leafy vegetables. Can I just say, okay, very quick aside, I was in a restaurant today, and a cafe, and I sat there for hours working. And I saw like 40 people eat breakfast, and nobody ate their lettuce. Everybody ate their cheese and their eggs, and nobody ate their lettuce.
Where was the lettuce?
Good green stuff. Like, it was the garnish, but it was edible. It was like really nice salad greens. Nobody ate it. Eat your greens and your eggs and some organ meats, and don't eat seed oils and sugar and grains and dairy.
Way to go, Steph.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And sleep well and stuff. Noelle's going to retire me. You have been formally retired. You can't talk about anything anymore. Anyway, so these are my thoughts on how these things two relate. And I think it's time for you to start talking.
I would just say, I'm just going to be short and sweet. I think that it's still hypothalamic amenorrhea, because that's what you went on the pill for. So the pill stops your own hormone production by adding synthetic ones. Yeah. And I think that the situation is still there. If you had a specific condition, a hormonal condition or hormonal imbalance, went on the pill, a pill's not going to change it at all. So I know that you've been doing a little bit of work, maybe a month or two with a registered dietitian. If you have not had a period and you didn't even bleed with those placebo pills for years, it's going to take a lot longer than a few weeks. And I know that that's really hard. It sucks. It sucks to be gaining weight and to be in this vulnerable position and to be going against the grain and to like have this mental and emotional, be in this mental and emotional space where you're feeling more anxiety about all of this. And how long is this going to go on? And how much weight do I have to gain? I would encourage you to kind of see this as an overall healing of your body. And your weight's going to fluctuate. I can't tell you when you're going to stop gaining weight. I can't tell you if you're going to end up losing some of that weight, but your weight is going to fluctuate during this time. So I would just pursue overall healing. I would pursue eating enough. I would pursue providing your body with all the nutrients it needs, because something is wrong. You don't have a period. You're experiencing hypothalamic amenorrhea because your body is under so much stress that your body says, we got to shut down. We got to shut down a cycle. We have to shut down that shifting hormones to a cycle because there's an underlying root cause. Something is wrong. And that is, in this case, with hypothalamic amenorrhea, it is not enough. There's a massive energy imbalance, and the body perceives that it's starving and not getting enough nutrients, or not enough of specific nutrients. So you have to radically pursue that. At the same time, alongside of that, also work on your mental and emotional health and work on your mindset, because something got you in this place in the first place. You were over-exercising, you were under-eating because of underlying beliefs that you had about food and about your body and about yourself and your worth. And so you have to be able to undo a lot of those beliefs and rebuild new conversations around that as well at the same time. Otherwise, this is only going to be a temporary thing and you're going to go right back to doing what you did before as a coping mechanism and or, you know, to rid yourself of shame and to start to feel worthy again. And we did do an episode. I did do an episode with Dr. Jolene Brighton, episode number 273. I will link to it in the show notes. We talk all about post-birth control syndrome. I think one of the interesting things to note is that the birth control pill does deplete a lot of nutrients, a lot of key nutrients, including B vitamins and magnesium and selenium and zinc and antioxidants. So coming off the pill, you are going to have deficiencies in that, which is even more of a reason to just long term really be focusing on building a lot of those nutrient stores. That's where that anti-inflammatory diet comes into play, cruciferous vegetables. You really want to support your liver function as well, because you need to be working on, you know, properly excreting a lot of that synthetic hormones that you were taking with the birth control pill that can kind of be residual or left over. So that's where the leafy greens, eat your leafy greens, comes into play. Broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, all that supports liver function. Foods rich in heme iron and B vitamins like grass-fed meats and organ meats are great. Sulfur-rich foods like pasture-raised eggs, all of these really support proper liver function and proper liver detoxification, where you're getting a lot of those used hormones out of your system and they're not wreaking havoc and creating any sort of estrogen dominance or hormonal imbalance. I did write a post on how to stop taking birth control pills without the side effects. I know you've already stopped taking it, but I'll link to that in the show notes because that just gives you a quick rundown of some of the things that you can expect and what to focus on. I love that you're working with a registered dietitian. Stay the course. It is likely the same thing that you went on the pill for, and it's just going to take more work, and it sucks, and I'm sorry. But you're doing a good thing.
On the way.
Question number three is from Kai. How to incorporate more physical activity and better nutrition when you work 40 to 50 hours a week and are so tired?
I think I would start with interrogating why you are so tired. Because 40 to 50 hours a week is full. Yeah. But I imagine that it can be done and feel like you have energy, right? Be energizing. And so there's an exclamation point after you're tired. And so I'm wondering if the tiredness is because you feel like you don't have time. Do you do a lot of other stuff on top of this that maybe you don't have to be doing? Is it because you're not sleeping well? Is it because you're drinking too much caffeine or not enough caffeine? Or I think that's definitely the place to start, because there's a lot of options here. You know, and you said 40 to 50 hours a week, and what I could recommend would totally depend on what that work schedule is. You know, do you work nights? Right? That would totally change everything. But assuming that it's within the range of daily work that the majority of people do, I think probably options for adding some fitness to your life are some of the healthiest, maybe, would be incorporating occasional workouts in the morning, you know, to help with your circadian rhythm, to go along with your circadian rhythm, or on the weekends, if you have weekends, right? It's hard for me to even make recommendations because it needs to be particular to you, which is why I would start with the source of tiredness and really analyzing the swings in your life, the work, the energy, your energy flows. Like, I watch myself very, very carefully. I know that if I sleep well through the night, my most productive hours are going to be the first 2 or 3 hours I'm awake and I don't even eat. And I have a choice with what I'm going to do with that time. And I could work out or I could work on my projects, right? Or, it's, you know, I've gone through periods in my life where I've had a lot of energy in the evenings, or sometimes I just feel it like cresting and troughing. It goes up and down, and riding that wave is really important. And so I would just start with self-familiarity and look to be restful. Focus on getting rid of tiredness and then adding activity to your life, maybe won't feel so hard, and make sure that it's an activity that you like. And never put pressure on yourself so that you have to do so much at a certain point in time. You know, you see all these Instagram posts or whatever, like, you got to go out and you got to go for an hour, and I'm going to push and I'm going to do it no matter what. And that's an okay mentality to have, and I definitely do it sometimes. But I think when tiredness is a problem, and it definitely has been for me a lot in my life, or motivation or whatever, your goal is simply get on the bike. Most days after this, when Noelle and I are done recording, I am going to, my first goal is change my clothes and stand outside. And I'm going to stand outside, and that's going to feel pretty good. And I'm going to be like, you know what? All right, I'm going to grab my bike, and then I'm going to get in my bike, and then it's going to, I'm going to go for a little bit, and then I'm probably going to keep going. Right. But it's also okay if I stop, because that just has to be okay. And then you find that you can keep going more often than not. Right. And that just has to be something that, you know, that works for you in terms of nutrition. I mean, Noelle would be able to speak more to this than I would, because she works so much with proper nutrition for herself and her family. I buy convenience. I buy bars. I buy vegetables that have already been chopped, or they come in a bag and they've already been washed. And I literally, I kid you not, I have photographic evidence, because people like send me photos of their like nice foods that they took like hours to make. And I'll send them a photo of like a stack of broccoli I haven't even cut in the microwave, you know? The other day, I literally, normally I buy broccoli like cut up into little bits. And the other day I bought a head of broccoli and I was like, crap, am I even going to like, am I even going to make this? Because it requires me to take a knife and like chop the bits. Oh, take like 30 seconds. I did it. But yeah. I buy for convenience. And sometimes maybe that's, you could, health and convenience is a thing. It's a tiny nexus, but it's a thing. And sometimes it takes more money. And if you have it, that's a great privilege. And if you don't, then you do the best you can. I've recently been told that the Coconuts and Kettlebells cookbook, like, you know, by friends who have been using it, happens to be very, you know, friendly on that spectrum in terms of being accessible and healthy at the same time. So it's not just me and Noelle saying it.
Your friends have read Coconuts and Kettlebells?
Yeah, a few have used it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So anyway, here are my thoughts. What are your thoughts?
I think that was really insightful, first and foremost, to address the tiredness, because I think you're in good company, Kai. I think a lot of people are in the scenario where they have full-time jobs and they also have kids and spouses who are working full-time, and it's just a lot. And it's a lot of coordination, and it's a lot of time management. And if you're tired, you first have to address that. I feel like sleep, it has to be the foundation of your entire life. Sleep sets up your day. So if, and which is why I was crumbling, you know, both times postpartum. I think that if you're being drained mentally and emotionally at work, that's definitely something to consider. Sometimes you can change that, sometimes you can't. But it might be worth reevaluating and working towards a situation that doesn't drain you and drain you of your health. If you're having problems sleeping at night, I think that when you're working a 40 to 50 hour, you know, job or whatever, you know, a lot of people have two jobs. They work retail and they work, you know, whatever, like my husband did retail and reserves, and it was just a lot. And what we ended up really trying to prioritize was, and this sucks, but we don't watch TV at night. You know, we went through phases where we were in bed at 9:30. Lights out, sleep glasses on. I promise you it will help. Get blue blocks, sleep plus glasses. Put those on when the sun sets and go to bed and get your 7 to 8 hours of sleep so that you cannot be exhausted physically, and you know that that fatigue is not from lack of sleep. And then you're able to wake up. I feel like a lot of people are able, if you can wake up at 6:30 naturally or 6 o'clock-ish naturally, there is a good chunk of time in there where you can be pretty productive. You can prep a meal. You can get a quick workout in. Guys, I only do 20-minute workouts with Peloton 3 times a week. So technically, I'm working out 1 hour a week. And anybody can do that. So if you can just naturally wake up at 6, get it done. And like we've said last time Steph and I were together, a body that is in motion stays in motion. When you are doing workouts and when you are feeling, doing workouts gives you a little bit of energy, and that energy continues to fuel the energy to do more workouts. And there's this delicate balance of don't push yourself when you're overtired and drained and chronically stressed, but also make sure that you're honest with yourself. Are you fatigued just because you've been sitting around a lot, or you haven't been working out and all you're doing, you're just 100%, you're just sitting constantly and you're sitting at work, and that's just draining, and then you don't do anything to kind of re-energize you and pick up your spirits, and you're not doing anything for yourself? Because that can be very draining, and I've experienced that as well. So make sure that you figure out where that balance is and that you get into doing something. So you just have to find those little pockets of time where you can be intentional, fit it in, and then you will feel more energized and you'll be in that motion. I also think PrepDish is very helpful for people just to kind of get you set back on track with meal planning, prepping your meals. You get up, like I said, if you can create that chunk of time in the morning, for me, it's crucial. That is my most productive time because I have two toddlers. I have a full-time job. My husband has a full-time job. And so I have to find those little pockets of time and stay in that routine. And if I lose that, then it's like everything goes, to the wayside. So get up early in the morning, prep your dinner so that when you come home and you are drained and you are done, you can, throw a few things in the pan. It's already done for you and you have a good meal. And again, that's going to help your health, your energy levels, your fatigue. You're going to feel better when you're eating better. So we're in a phase right now where we are doing bulk cooking. And most of the recipes that I put out on my website, I have this awesome recipe for egg roll in a bowl. I will link to it. We make that every week. We make mini meatloafs every week because both of my kids will eat them. It feeds the baby. It feeds us. And I always double any recipe. Part of me is like, I think it's funny when I'm writing out recipes because I'm like, who's going to eat? Like, this is nothing. But, we double. It feeds us. And I always want to get at least one or two more meals out of it so that I'm having something for lunch and then we have a second dinner. So I've actually tripled the recipe for the mini meatloafs. So we're in a bulk cooking phase and that's how we get by. That's how we have good food around. We don't have the option now. I don't have the option to not feed my children. I don't want them to just continually eat snacks. So, we have to set aside time to make sure that we're making those kind of family-friendly, really cook-in-bulk recipes. There's a chicken sheet pan with broccoli and sweet potatoes recipe. And yeah, it takes a half an hour to make. But you get a lot of good food out of that for days. So it's just figuring out where are those pockets of time and really being diligent with this is when I'm going to take this time and I'm going to prep my food, or I'm going to take this time and I'm going to do a 20-minute workout. As opposed to, 20 minutes can go like that when you're just channel surfing or trying to find something on Netflix, or you get caught up in scrolling on Instagram. Like, Instagram is the biggest time stealer. And I'm speaking that from personal experience. Facebook news feeds, the biggest time stealer. I have to I'm sitting there, in bed or whatever before. And I've told you I've been trying to work on this, but just be aware of when you are scrolling. Like, if I'm sitting there in bed and I'm scrolling and I catch something and then I'm like, oh gosh. And then I see a comment and then I want to see all the comments underneath it. And I'm like, what am I doing? I'm living in this false reality, getting caught up in this drama that doesn't have anything to do with me. It's not going to be productive. It's not great for my health and it's wasting my time. And my husband's sitting right here and I could be talking to him. So it's just being aware, acutely aware of those kind of interactions that are just time stealers, and they're taking up space in your life and they're not doing anything for you, not doing anything positive. So what are things that are taking up rent in your life that aren't paying rent, that aren't giving back to you?
That's a lovely analogy.
Anything more from you?
No. Okay. That was nice.
It was nice talking to you.
Same.
I like catching up. I really do. I've for the last 5.5 years, we've had.
Yeah, please don't retire me.
We've had to chat. This is where I'm formally retiring you.
Stephanie, I appreciate you. But now it's time to go.
I can't believe it's almost 300 episodes.
I know.
It's amazing.
It's overwhelming. I for the last 5.5 years, we have talked weekly, except for the times where I had babies. But we have talked, not weekly, monthly.
Those were the days. Just kidding. Noelle's the best. She's such a good person. Noelle's even a better person than she seems. I'm not even kidding. This is legit stuff. You know, it's not easy to come
really,
by.
Really? Sometimes I feel like I'm not, though. I'm not. I feel like Noelle see other people doing so much, and I'm like...
Right when we started our podcast, Noelle was like, okay, so what charity are we giving our money to? It wasn't even a question. It wasn't like, should we? It was like, what charity are we giving our money to? I was like, oh, I like you, you know?
Right,
this but... Great. This but is going to work out.
Yeah, but I struggle with that because... You know, I'm also like throwing money at things, but not actually doing the work. Like, I'm always like, where can I serve? But it's very hard to serve. Here I am making. See, this is why I don't feel like a good person, because I'm making excuses because I have two toddlers. So it's very hard to like serve. And even in my church, I'm like, when are we going to serve a church? Like, we got to sign up to serve. And it's just we never do it. But I'm like, please just take all the money.
I know.
It makes me feel like
I know. And it's very challenging. And my entire life is a set of excuses for not having done more with my privilege. But you're about to protest in the same way that I was about to protest to you. We all just serve in our own ways. And, you know, you have a ton of really amazing ways. And just the way that you walk down the street and you're nice to people.
Yeah. And you can't discount that in this day and age. Yeah.
Yeah. Just all the stuff. So anyway, we shall keep fighting the good fights, and you all keep on fighting the good fights, and follow us on Insta, but don't spend a lot of time on Insta.
And true. And like, shout out to the people who have been here for 5.5 years and are still listening to us. I know we're not a good fit for everybody for their entire life, and we've talked about a lot of things, but
over and over.
Shout out to y'all that just keep showing up, and we, you know... I appreciate it, because I know without a doubt you disagree with us on some things and you're still here. So we love you all.
Like, I know, even you heathens who like green apples. Wow, boy, that's a deal breaker for me, just so you know.
Which, by the way, I get this. One of the questions to come into our Facebook group is, what team are you on? What apples do you like? And a lot of people answer that question. They're like, I have no idea what this means, which is funny.
Block.
Like, no. You're not allowed in. But essentially, I could just summarize this in 5 seconds. We used to talk about apples. Stephanie's very, very passionate about the apples that she likes, which include Fuji. I do not like Fuji. I like Pink Lady. We fight about it.
Sweet apples only. Sweet apples only.
I hate sweet apples.
Look, fruit is supposed to be sweet. This is funny. I just had a grape before we started the podcast, which is my new favorite fruit, by the way. We have to go.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, my kids love frozen bananas. I tagged you in it on my stories. I'm like, Hellstone Power, you love this, but I'm sure you didn't catch it because you don't check that Instagram. That Instagram account. Oh, well, yeah, you missed it. But I freeze bananas, and Maverick will eat an entire, like, two bananas if they're frozen and chopped into little pieces, and he signs banana. He knows that's his only sign that he'll do repeatedly in every meal. He's like, banana. So I have to, like, freeze dozens of bananas and chop them up. It's funny. And Stella calls it banana popsicle.
So kids.
Kids, man, I tell you what. Anyway, I think it's time.
It's time.
Are we even
next time?